Tov to everyone. L'chol ha'mazinim. Welcome, Naomi, back to shul. Good to see you. Welcome our youngest Talmidat today, Gabriella Schiff. Any questions, they'll be filtered through you. All right, this week we read the Sedra of Vayeshev. Vayeshev is a Sedra that has a lot of different narratives to it. Well, of course, at the end of the story coalescing in Parshas Vayechi, Vayigash, I want to focus on one thing, and that is the relationship of Yaakov and Yosef at the beginning of the Sedra. Of course, we start a little before that with just Yaakov and his response to Esav, and then his initial settlement in the land of Israel. Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Migurei Aviv Beretz Canaan. Yaakov came back and he settled in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. The Medrash says, number one, quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, Nosu ve'en rodef rasha, the rasha flees and no one pursues him. V'tzadikim kichfir yiftach, the tzadik has confidence like a kfir, like a young lion. Arak rashiya ve'lo redifin lei, a rasha flees and nobody chases after him. Tichsiv, as the pasuk says, when Yaakov and Esav parted, the pasuk says, "Va'yelech el eretz mipnei Yaakov achiv." They parted company, and then Esav went his own way because of Yaakov, his brother. So, what is this concept first enunciated in the Mishlei? Nosu ve'ein rodef rasha, that the rasha flees and no one pursues him. Why is the rasha thing to begin with, as opposed to tzaddik? The tzaddik stands strong like a lion. Tzaddik has to flee also sometimes. Yaakov himself fled. So pshat is that at this juncture in the story, Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Canaan, Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, Yaakov now finally came back to a point of complete serenity. Everything that he had set out to do in life, all the hardships that he had before, to become the heir to Yitzchak, the beneficiary of the brachos that God gave to Avram and to Yitzchak, to marry, to have a family of 12 sons representing the Shvatim, to come back to the land of Israel, everything is there now. Yaakov dwelled b'shalva, but Esav returned to Seir, and no one chased him. So why would we think that anybody should have to chase Esav? Esav was a powerful individual. So the pshat is that when a tzaddik flees, the loss is felt. And so people want to go after him. We have an echo of this notion in Halacha that Rebbe Shaharag, the Shogeg, Rebbe Shagolo, his whole yeshiva is Gola with him. A Rebbe that kills negligently has to go to the Irmiklot, his whole yeshiva follows him. When Vayetze Yaakov Miber Shava Vayelech Harano, a tzaddik leaves a city, there's a Roshem. So when a tzaddik leaves, people sense the loss and want to pursue him, want to follow him. But when a Rasha flees, the environment is improved. People benefit from it. It's like sometimes you'll be in a social group, there'll be one negative person, someone walks over, there's a negative personality, and when they leave, the whole air is lightened, and people, I hope it doesn't happen too often, but the air is lightened, people feel better that a negative force has been removed. That's Nosu Ve'in Rodef Rasha. When the Rasha flees, the atmosphere is ameliorated, and therefore people feel better and none want to chase him. But when the tzaddik is present, kichmir yiftach, the tzaddik has confidence in his way of life, his values, his lifestyle, so therefore people flock to him. Why did Esau flee? Vayelech el eretz mipnei Yaakov achiv. Why did he go back to Seir mipnei Yaakov achiv? So Medrash offers two opinions here. Rebbe Lozor Amar mipnei shtar chov, because of the debt that had to be paid. What's the debt? The debt is that to inherit Eretz Yisrael comes at a certain price. Ki ger yezaracha be'eretz lo lahem va'avadum ve'inu asam arba me'el shana. You have to be a slave, but be a ger, an alien, an exile for centuries. That's the shtar chov. Esav did not want to pay it. What second opinion? Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Amar, b'nei habusha, because of the shame. Because of the shame that Esav had as to his lifestyle, as the choices that he made. He sold his bechorah, Rashi says. He sold his bechorah, so he couldn't face Yaakov anymore. What's the difference in these two pshatim? And you see, just to broaden it a little, if an Esav, of course, really was the first child to go off the derech, he had two wonderful parents, Yitzchak and Rivka. Why do you leave? What sends children in that direction? So one's the shtarchov. They want to pay the price. The price is that either as a member of Klal Yisrael and subject to the persecution, to the inhibition of certain opportunities, to restrictions on one's lifestyle that seem oppressive, burdensome to the outsider. That's the shtarchov that Esav did not want to pay, and so he gave it up. Vayelech al Eretz, he returned. The other is busha. Busha is a different thing. Busha means that a person feels he's flawed. He's wanting. He's unworthy. He's sinful. And therefore does not want to subject himself to the guilt that would come about as being part of a nation that lives a certain way. So Esav really had both these dimensions. Like we say all the time, it's not really a machlokes. They're both giving different nuances to Esav's mentality, and of course from a macro perspective, how we engage the world even on our terms. But meshtachov me'abusha, v'tzadikim kichvir yiftach, that's Vayeshev Yaakov. Yaakov now is at this moment, really, this pinnacle, a very brief shining moment of his life that, of course, the Medrash says here, Rashi quotes it, that Bikesh Yaakov Leshev Shalva. He had everything to which he had aspired, and now he had that, and he had nothing else. There's nothing else that he wanted. Of course, the Medrash goes on to say, Kofat Zalov Rog Zashal Yosef. But that's a different Joshua. That's for another time. Let's look at three for a moment because it adds to this point. Zovar Acher VaYeshev Yaakov Kach Omru Chachamim Lo Nehna Yaakov Avinu Mimoshav Ad Shegar Bimgurei Aviv. Yaakov Avinu had really no hana, no enjoyment from any of his habitations until he dwelled in his father's sojournings Bimgurei Aviv, where his father was. Yaakov had tremendous yishuv adas here at this point. Why? Now he actually returned to his father. His father was still alive when he came back. His mother was not. His father was. He returned to his father. It's like he had come full circle. There is a feeling that people have that when they can say that themselves, that they have followed and have successfully completed the work of their parents. I mean, there's a sense of satisfaction with this continuity in life, from parent to child to grandchild, etc. When there's continuity, you know, bonim uvnei bonim oskim b'tor mitzvos, there's a satisfaction for the older generations, as we know, as we see projecting forward. But there's also satisfaction by the people who are living it, to say they're really following in the footsteps of their parents and the ancestors. That was the hana that Yaakov had. He could not have this hana in exile, couldn't have when he was estranged from his brother, exiled from his land. Now he had it, Be'eretz Migurei Aviv. Now, in fact, his life had come full circle. Dover Acher, very interesting point, Migurei, Gematria Migurei is 259. Shamar Kadosh Baruch Hu LaAvram Yoda Teida Kigeres V'Aretz Olahem. Right, Ad Shah Shenisyashev Yaakov Avinu Beretz Megurei Aviv. It was 259 years to the promise to Avram of 400. How did the calculations work out? So the Medrash in context says that Avram was 100 when he gave birth to Yitzchak. Add 60 years to when Yitzchak fathered Yaakov, that's 160, and Yaakov at this point was 99. Remember, he was 84, 63 when he left home, 14 years Shem Ve'Aver, 7 years he worked for Lavan before he was to marry Rachel, didn't marry Rachel, married Leah, then married Rachel, then worked another 6 years, alright, that's a total of 97, then it took him 2 years to get home. 99. Add 99 to the 160, that's 259. There's a separate calculation as well, because of course the promised offering wasn't given to him when he was just born. So there are different calculations that involve adding just the times that when Yaakov's entire life, that it's a little complicated to get into, but the point of a gematria always is Megure is 259, is to share an idea that Yaakov's life had stages, and now at this stage it's complete. 259, there's still time to go. Of course, it's not their Eretz yet, because he's living there, he hasn't inherited it, but nonetheless it's still part of the fulfillment of the promise to Avram Avinu. Keep in mind that from the time that Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, the Jewish people were there 290 years. Okay? Of that 290 years, the first 71 of them were when Yosef was still alive. Okay? So it was a little over a century and a quarter of actual servitude that the Jewish people experienced in Egypt. Of course, it graduated in intensity, but nonetheless. But this was a stage in Yaakov's life, and from his perspective, he could say at this point that he wants everything that he has everything that he wants. It's always dangerous to say that, because they were confronted with new challenges. I wanted the point. Let's go to number two. Dovra Cher, Vayeshev Yaakov, Beretz Megurei Aviv. So it's in the land of Canaan, all right? So something is being added here, because we know it's the land of Canaan. The Medrash explains, interesting Medrash, famous one. Avram Gier Giurim. Avram made converts, he converted people. Hadod Dechsiv, Vaykach Avram as Sarai Ishto, Amar Abelaz Vashem Rav Yosef Ben Zimra, in Wisconsin Kobay Olam, Livros Afili Yutush Echad, the whole world got together and tried to create even a mosquito, even a flea, and breathe life into it. Ain't on Yichol, they couldn't do that. We can make things, we can't give life to them. Va'atomer, and you say, Ves ha'nefesh asher asu v'charon, that's the end of the pasuk. Avram took his wife Sarah and Lot, Ves ha'nefesh asu v'charon. He said, how do you make a soul? Making a soul implies infusing with life. Ela elu hagerim shegiyer osam Avram. These are the converts that Avram converted. V'lamar amar asu, Vlamar Giru, why made and not converted? Lamedcha shekomishu mekarves hager keilu virao. Whoever brings a convert closer, it's as if he created him. So Tomar Avram hayimegayer v'sara lohay. So megayeres, he'll say only Avram, not Sara. No, Tamar Lomar. That's asher asu v'charon. Asher asa enksiv. Doesn't say he made singular. Ela asu, asher asu, they made. Amar Bichunya, Avram hayimegayeres ha'anashim, v'sara megayeres es ha'anashim. Avram converted the men, Sara the women. And of course, we have to then ask the question, what happened to these people? What happened to these people? So the simple pshat we would understand is that by Yaakov's time, they were gone. Yitzhak could not sustain them. Avram had a charismatic personality, and he was able to raise them and give them life and attachment to God. But Yitzhak was more reclusive, and so he could not retain them, and so they filtered back into their various tribes. Medrash has a different approach, different comment altogether. So Medrash continues. First, what did Avram do? Ma tamalom asher asu. What does it mean to make a person a Jew? Ela milamed shehoya Avram avinu machnison l'soch beiso. What he did is he brought them into his home. Umachilon, gave them food. Mashkon, gave them something to drink. Lumikarvan, he brought them near Machnison Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. He brought them under the wings of a divine presence. Note the order here. Note the order. Three generations here. Note the order. What did he do? Machnison Masoch Beso. First he brought them into his home, gave them to eat and drink, and only then did he teach them ideas. Sometimes we have it backwards. Sometimes we think that people are only worthy of our attention once we're able to pound the ideas of Torah into them. And then we'll befriend them. Then we'll be hospitable to them. It actually works exactly the opposite. Yeah, Chabad, right. It's what's called, we can call chalant diplomacy. You bring someone into your house and you give them a little chalant, give them a little kugel, and they see Shabbos. That's how people will be brought close to Torah. It's not just the ideas. The ideas, of course, are the necessary follow-up, but I think most people agree today, not everyone, but most, what's experiential is more impressive at first than what's intellectual. Because a person who sees a Shabbos and experiences the Shabbos is then drawn much more readily to Shabbos than if a person read a book on Shabbos or learn Hilchot Shabbos or even the philosophy of Shabbos. You have to experience it. When you experience it, then there's an attraction to it. And the Torah is the same way. But the only way to get people to experience it is to relate to them on a human level. And that's what Avraham Sarov masters at. Machnisan l'soch beisa. Bring them into the home. Give them something to eat, something to drink. Make them feel that they're welcome. They're equals. They have something themselves to offer. And they're not just recipients, disciples before the master. Only then mekarvanu machnisan tachas kanfei hashchina. That's what Avram did. What happened after him? Well, we see. Yaakov giyer giyurim. Yaakov also had converts. He also continued the work of Avram Avinu. How do we know this? Vayomer Yaakov el beso. Yaakov is in last week's Edra. Yaakov said to his house, when they were on the verge of entering Shechem, Veskol Asher Imo, all those who were with him, Hosiru es Elohei HaNechar Asher Besochachem, get rid of all the foreign gods that are with you, meaning destroy your idols. Destroying your idols is akin to bringing them to the Torah. Gemara says a person who renounces idolatry, it's Gilu Kim Kol HaTorah Kula. It's as if you fulfill the entire Torah. The very basis of the Torah is that there's one God who's not physical, can't be worshipped in as a physical form or image, and is a source of all morality, and that's how we relate to him. So, Hasiru es Elohei HaNechar V'Sochachem. Get rid of all of them. So a nice pshat in the Medrash HaMavur here from the Ohel Torah, that you see there's a difference in the approach of Avraham and Yaakov. What was Avraham's approach? Avram's approach was to fill them with deeds, all right? Bring them into his home, give them something to eat and drink, teach them Torah, but show them how to worship God. What's the Derech HaChaim that God wants? Give them a sense of morality that they'll be able to articulate and to develop and to implement in their daily lives. So Avram had, I guess what we would say loosely, is a positive approach. Meaning, fill them with Torah, fill them with Maisim Tovim, and that's how they'll connect to God. Yaakov had an opposite approach, not a negative approach, but in a sense of, you have to remove the Avodah Zarah. You have to remove evil. There are two ways to bring people to Torah. One is to fill them with mitzvahs, which the truth is both work together, but you have to one way is to fill them with mitzvahs, and the other way is to remove the false ideas from them. Remove as best one can bad midos, bad values, things that distance a person from Hashem. If you take away impediments to divine service, already you have brought the person closer to divine service. Just like if you teach them how to daven, you've brought them closer to divine service. Yaakov, the altar said, developed the pnimius hanefesh, the inner soul of the person, to remove the idolatry so that already perfects and sanctifies the individual. Yaakov dealt in a sense with the chitzonios. He said to people, perfect your deeds, perfect your ways, and this way you'll come tachas kanfei hashchina. So Yaakov did it also. B'yitzhak lo shamanu. So that's to say that Avram and Yaakov did something. Proselytize that Yitzhak Avinu did not do. How could that be? We have a tendency to think of Yitzhak, you know, as, you know, what he really accomplished. He's passive at the Akedah, passive in his marriage, and told us he was briefly active, but he's like a bridge just between Avram and Yaakov, and didn't really accomplish anything. Chas v'chalila. The Yitzhak lo shamanu. No, you see, Yitzhak did the same thing. Not like his father, and not like his son. but the same thing. V'heichan shamanu, how do we know this? Reb Yitzchok, v'tani lo mishum Reb Hoshaya Rabba, b'shem Yehuda Bar Simon, kan ksiv, v'yeshev Yaakov, v'eretz migurei aviv, my migurei aviv. Plan words. Migiyurei aviv. He dwelt in the land of his father's converts. Meaning Yaakov, when he came back to his father's house, even after his father died, wasn't alone. He wasn't in a world of pagans. He was a world of in which he lived in the company of his father's converts. Just like Avram had Oner, Eshkol, and Mamre, Yitzhak had his chevr as well, the survivors of his father, their children. Yaakov did as well. Where his own father's converts lived. So it means that the environment of Canaan was in a very hospitable environment in which Yaakov could live, and that's why he felt a sense of shalva as well. So from that perspective, we understand Chazal said, I think it's in the last week's Sedra of the Medrash, or the Avos Hein Eina Merkava, that the Avos are all God's chariots in the world. The chariot is the vehicle that takes the Melech forward, that presents his entourage. Each of the Avos, equally, with the entourage of God in the world, his chariot, his royal chariot, his Merkava. Each of them equally, not one more or less than the other. Each did it in a different way, but each of them equally. So what then happened to all these converts? That's a different shot. What happened to them? When Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim, they were all lost. In the years the Jews were in exile, they lost their supportive environment. There was no Av, no Avram, no Yitzhak, no Yaakov to teach them anymore. After one generation was gone, and they faded into the pagan tribes of Canaan, to be met, unfortunately, on the other side of the Egyptian and wilderness exile, we returned to the land of Canaan.
Why didn't they come
to Egypt? They weren't welcome. They weren't part of the house of Yaakov. And you couldn't bring a land. Egypt was suspicious of foreigners anyway, as we see from the story when Yosef got down there and the brothers came down, because they became the most powerful empire in the world, and the richest one. The only ones during the famine had grain. So they didn't let people stay regularly. People could come and shop and then leave. Otherwise, they would just add to the burdens of Egypt. What's that? Egyptians. There were Egyptians who were gathered once the Jews left Egypt to go to back to Israel, not when they left Canaan to go to Egypt with them. They were just family. The Shivim Nefesh, Yerda Avaseinu Mitzrayim, came down with just 70 souls. Okay, let's get now to Yaakov and Yosef. So all these things really lead up, because now Yaakov, like I said, is at the apex of his existence. It never gets better. It only gets worse. And Yaakov had that type of existence where he was always finding himself in one nadir after another, finally at the pinnacle, and then now things fall apart pretty quickly. Amar Shmuel Bar Nachman, Eila Toldos Yaakov, Yosef. These are the genealogies of Yaakov, Yosef. Yosef. Lo hayetzarach krolam emarkein, Eila Toldos Yaakov, Reuven. What the Pasuk should have said is that the genealogy of Yaakov is Reuven, and then Shimon, and Levi, etc., and then Yosef. It's as if it jumps over all the other Shvatim, the other brothers, the other sons of Yaakov, and goes right to Yosef. Elamatam Olomar Yosef. So why Yosef? Why was told as Yaakov only Yosef? So listen to this amazing Medrash. The insight, it's all summarized in one idea, but the insight the Medrash has into their lives. Yaakov and Yosef essentially had duplicate lives. Duplicate lives. Yosef followed his father's footsteps in astonishing ways. Matam Elomar Yosef, El Shekoma She'era Lazeh, Era Lazeh. Whatever happened to one, happened to the other. And look at the similarities. Listen to the symmetry. Mazen nolad mahul, afzen nolad mahul. Yaakov was born circumcised, so did Yosef. Take my word for it. But the Medrash proves a different psukim. Can't go into it. Mazen imo akara, afzen imo akara. Yaakov's mother was barren, Rivka. Yosef's mother was barren, Rachel. Ma ze'imo yolda shnayim, av ze'imo yolda shnayim. Just like Yaakov's mother gave birth to two sons, so did Yosef's mother, two sons, Yosef and Binyamin. Ma ze b'chor, av ze b'chor. Just like Yaakov was a b'chor, so too Yosef was a b'chor. How was Yaakov a b'chor? He really wasn't a b'chor. Yosef, Esav was, because he sold the b'chorah. All right, was Yosef a Bechor? Yes, he's Bechor Rachel, but he's not the actual Bechor, because Reuven's the actual Bechor. But nonetheless, the fact that Yosef is Bechor LaRachel played a big role in Yaakov's life. So see again, what's the parallel? Yaakov had the Bechorah, but in a typical way. Yosef had the Bechorah too, but also in an atypical way. Next, Maze niskasha imo baleida, avze niskasha imo bishas leida. Just like Yaakov's mother gave birth amid turbulence, right? By Yisro Tetsu habanim kirba, so too Rachel as well did not have a simple childbirth. She died, in fact, in childbirth. Atikash belidita. Next, Mazel Chivsoneoso, Avzechov Sonimoso. Just like Yaakov's brother hated him, so too Yosef's brothers hated him. Mazel Chiv Bikeshel Hargo, Avzebikshu Echov Hargo. Just like Yaakov's brother wanted to kill him, so too Yosef's brothers wanted to kill him. Shimon and Levi, they said, let's kill him. Mazeroe avzeroe. Yosef was Yaakov was a shepherd. Yosef was a shepherd. Zenistam v'zenistam. Each was hated. Sitma is different than sina. Sina is a hatred that manifests itself in deeds. What's sitma? It's a passionate, deep-seated hatred. Meaning, it's not just a hatred because of what someone does. It's a hatred of an essence. So at the end of Toldos, that's what it says about Esav and Yaakov, that Vayistimuhu, Balei Chitzim, Vayistom Esav es Yaakov. Esav had a deep-seated hatred of Yaakov, and so too the Torah says about the hatred of Yosef's brothers for him. Zenignav Shnei Famim, Vizenignav Shnei Famim. Each one was stolen twice. Both Yaakov and Esav, stolen twice. Meaning that in Yaakov's context, he said to Lavan that Lavan had taken from him Gnufsiyom, Gnufsi Laila. Yet Lavan kept cheating him. All right? You could say, in fact, that Yaakov, the Medrash says, that he was robbed by Eliphaz, Esav's son, when he left Canaan originally, and he was robbed again multiple times by Lavan, and so to Yosef. Yosef also said he was robbed or stolen twice. Ki gunov ganavti me'eretz ha'evrim. He was stolen several times. Once from his brothers, and then once from Potiphar's house, at the end of our Sedra this week. Zenis barach ba'osher, v'zenis barach ba'osher. Yaakov was blessed with wealth, right? And Yosef was also blessed with wealth by his father. Birchos shamay me'ol, birchos talmer etzes tachas. Ze yotze l'chutz l'aretz. Both of them had to be exiled. Yaakov to Charan, Yosef to Mitzrayim. Zed nasa isha michutz l'aretz v'zed nasa isha michutz l'aretz. They each married foreigners. Zeholid bana michutz l'aretz v'zeholid bana michutz l'aretz. Yaakov's children were born in chutz l'aretz, except for Binyamin. Yosef's children were all born in chutz l'aretz. Only one of the brothers like that, by the way. Everyone else had the children in Israel. They went down to Egypt with them. Ze livu malachim. Yaakov was accompanied, escorted by angels when he left Eretz Canaan. He came back, and so to Yosef, the Medrash says later here, when he was lost, wandering, looking for his brothers after his father sent him, the Medrash says livu shloshah malachim. Three angels accompanied him, meaning it was his destiny to find them. Zenizgad al yidei chalom, zenizgad al yidei chalom. One was exalted by a dream, Yaakov by his dream, the beginning of Yetzei. Yosef also through the dreams of the Sarmashkim, Sarofim, and Paro himself. Zenizbarech beis chomib b'shvilo, zenizbarech beis chomib b'shvilo. One's father-in-law's house was blessed because of him, and the other as well. Love him because of Yaakov. And Potiphar became Yosef's father-in-law, after he had that unfortunate incident when he jailed him, when he got out of prison, so he married off his daughter Asna to Yosef. So, but not only that, so Potiphar's house became successful. It's in our Sedra that Potiphar became, Yosef was an Ishmatzliach, and all the brachos that accrued to Yosef accrued to Potiphar's house when he worked there as well. Zeyard l'mitzrayim and Zeyard l'mitzrayim. Both Yaakov and Yosef went down to Egypt. Zekilos harov and Zekilos harov. Both ended a famine. When Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, famine ended. When Yosef came down, of course, he masterminded the end to the famine. Zemashbiyav and Zemashbiyav. Each one had others take oaths. Yaakov made Yosef take an oath to take him back to Canaan for burial. Yosef made his brothers make the same oath. Zemitzave v'zemitzave. Each had a similar command. Take me back to Eretz Yisrael for burial. Zemeis b'mitzrayim v'zemeis b'mitzrayim. They each died in Egypt. Zenechnat v'zenechnat. Each was embalmed, the Torah says. Zehe'elu atzmosav v'zehe'elu atzmosav. Each one had their bones, their remains, taken back to the land of Israel for burial. Yaakov in Chevron, Yosef in Shechem. By the way, what do we see here? Among other things. I mean, the symmetry is astounding, but from Zed Nolad Mohul to Zehe Elu Atzmosav, you have the entire span of their lives. From their very births to their very burial, Yosef's life paralleled his father. So in that sense, Yosef really was almost the equivalent of an Av. Only could be three Avos, it wouldn't be an Av, but you see where Yosef exists on the pantheon, to borrow a phrase, of Jewish life, because he's in the Hushpizen. Av is Yaakov, Yosef. Yosef's the leader of the brothers. Roi Lamalchus himself. Now what does all this mean? This parallel that exists between the lives of Yaakov and Yosef, from beginning to end, and every event in between they each experienced, it's an uncanny resemblance. We'll understand now why Yaakov saw Yosef as his natural heir. Yeah, well, it's next Medrash as well. But Yaakov saw Yosef as a natural successor to him, and really the paramount heir to the tradition of Avram and Yitzchak. Those are their life stories. Did they know each detail? Of course not. But did they perceive it? There's no doubt about it. Yaakov saw that in Yosef almost immediately. And that's why he was drawn to. Granted, he was Ben Rachel, and Rachel, the Bechor of Rachel. Rachel had died very, very young. But nonetheless, he saw in Yosef much more than simply he was the son of Rachel, which from a superficial perspective one might think. He saw qualities in Yosef that the others did not have. And that's why if you go to 5, the Yisrael Ahavas Yosef, Mikol Echov, Ki Ben Zchunim Hu Ayalo. Yisrael, meaning Yaakov in his guise as national leader. That's a basic formulaic point. Whenever the Torah says Yaakov, it's Yaakov the father. When the Torah calls him Yisrael, it means Yaakov is the leader of a nation, not just the father of a family. So Yisrael loved Yosef. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya, what do you love so much about Yosef? Shehaya ziv ekonim shelo domelo. Rashi quotes this also. Shehaya ziv ekonim shelo domelo. That Yosef had a physical resemblance to Yaakov. Not just that he had all these other events parallel Yaakov's lives. He looked like Yaakov. Reb Nechemya Amar, Shekwadi, he loved him, Shekol halacha, Shemos, Rishem, Ve'ever, Yaakov, Misaran lo. Whatever halachos, whatever teachings, whatever Torah, Shem and Ever conveyed to Yaakov, Yaakov conveyed to Yosef. What's the difference between Reb Yehuda and Reb Nechemya? So the physical similarity is something that we're all familiar with. Let's just give an example. So all my 12 grandchildren look like me. Everybody knows that. All right, but why is that so important? That the Zive Konim Domelo. Why should it matter that someone looks like someone else? you do feel an attachment to another person who resembles you. A good part of that is what we call the fantasy of immortality. If you see someone who looks like you, then you think in some sense they are you, and they will live on after you. So you don't depart this world, someone else takes your place. Right? That's why, as we all know, it's very important whenever any child is born to try to locate the features that remind them of one of their ancestors. Okay? If we take the young Gabriella Schiff, who does she look like?
Looks like Kenny.
Looks like Kenny. Okay, see? Taught to judge, but take your word for it. All right? Very nice. Looks like Naomi also, I'm sure, in some ways. Yet to be seen. But when we see, the identification becomes very close with someone who bears that physical resemblance to us. So Zidei Kunim Shelo Domelo, it means the intensity of the identification of Yaakov and Yosef was such that Yaakov saw Yosef as his posterity, in his eternity, someone who would live on after him as a leader, as taking his place as the head of the family. Reb Nechemya agrees, but he says the emphasis is different. How did Yaakov see the similarity between him and Yosef? There's an intellectual similarity, that Yosef was to be the heir to the ideas of Yaakov. In a word, Yosef was the Baal Masorah. Every generation is a Baal Masorah, Masorah of Moshe, Kibbutz Har Sinai, Masorah of Yehoshua, and the Rambam traced, I think, 40 people from Moshe to Rav Ashi. There's a Baal Masorah in every generation. Of all the brothers, Yosef was the Baal Masorah. Of course, very hard to convey that idea to the brothers, but nonetheless, that's what Yaakov saw. Yaakov, you know, the Targum explains that Yosef was a Bar Chokim. Bar Chokim means he had the greatest intellectual gifts of the brothers. And so Yaakov was naturally drawn to him, and that's what it means, Masar Lo, all the Torah, all the Halachos, the way of life and the values, the ideas of Shem Ve'Ever. That was the closeness of Yaakov to Yosef. Well, I just skipped the order of the psukim to make the to be consistent thematically. Naturally, this did not go well with the brothers. And what added to that, because Yaakov had this special relationship, if you look at number 8, V'asolo ksonis pasim, he made Yosef a coat of many colors. A dream coat, as in the Broadway show. He made him a coat of many colors. Rish Lakish B'Shem Rolozo Ben Azariah said, and this the Gemara says in Shabbos Daf Yudam at Beis in a slightly different form, Tzarech Adam Shalosh Shanos Ben Mibonov. Person should never distinguish one child from the others. Shayidek Sonis Pasim Shasovino Yaakov Yosef. Because of this multicolored coat that Yaakov made for Yosef, Vayisnuo, so the brothers hated him. The way the Gemara says it in Shabbos is that Bishvil Shnei Slam Melas, because of the two extra measures of silk that Yaakov put into Yosef's coat more than his brothers had, we were exiled to Egypt. Just because, you should never make distinctions, never play favorites among children. This is an interesting topic to discuss, because it seems very obvious. How could Yaakov not know that? Of course he knew that. And yet, parents are very often stuck in this regard. What if one child is superior to the others? What if one child is more talented than the others? You can't treat everyone the same when, in fact, every child is different. In fact, it's just as bad to treat everyone the same as to treat everyone unequally, it would seem. Because if it's unequal, some child feel that they're left out. If they're the same, other children feel shortchanged. So how do we strike the appropriate balance? Of course, Yaakov didn't give Yosef the Ksonis Pasim because he liked him better or he loved him more. He gave it to him as a symbol of royalty. He wanted both Yosef to know and really his brothers to know as well that this is Yosef's destiny, to be royalty, to be that leader, to be that natural successor to Yaakov. The question is, and it's really an unanswerable question, how do you make that point? Right? It's a very, very delicate balance. You know, just give an example. Let's say a parent sets a bedtime for a child, all right, 9 o'clock. would it matter to the parents? Does it make a difference to the parents if a child can't sleep or does not want to go to sleep and one child is learning the Silas Yesharim and is watching television or jumping around? It might make a difference. You know, if a child is doing something productive, don't fall asleep on his own. If a child is doing something unproductive, then you want to be more disciplined with that child. And yet, from the perspective of the children, it seems unfair. He's getting away with murder. He's doing what he wants to do, but I can't do what I want to do. And yet, it's better for one to be able to express himself in that area where it's not better for the other to do. So how do you make these distinctions? That's the tightrope parents have to walk. I mean, obviously what the Gemara is saying is that Yaakov tried to walk it, but it was a little too heavy-handed and didn't turn out the right way, as we see from events taking place. Grant Ashkocha was masterminding these events, but nonetheless, it's bad to do it in an explicit way in which both the deed and the consequence is not apparent to every child, all right? So for parents to deviate or distinguish between the children, then I would think it's much better to do it in such a way that everyone knows why distinctions are being made in each case. Because that's the equivalent of not treating every child the same. You can't treat the child as a good student, but then the child's not a good student. That makes no sense. For that matter, you can't treat the child as athletic the same as a child is not athletic. You can't force them into one thing. You have to recognize their personalities, chanoch l'nar pidarko, recognize the personalities, and try to guide them accordingly. Of course, it's easier in theory than in practice. Practice is what makes for sargil bonim. So you hope you analyze and evaluate each child's personality and talents and temperament accurately enough that you can guide them properly without the parent imposing or projecting onto that child what that child wants to be. Don't we know of people who are wanting? The parents who are not athletic, who force their children into athletics, whether they're suited for it or not? Yes, I've seen such a thing, and vice versa. So you have to be mindful that the parent is not the little me, but the person himself, and take it from there. Of course, what is inevitable, though, is that every parent is going to see a particular child as more aligned with his or her own personality than other children. I get to sit through a lot of bat mitzvah speeches, as you well know, and it's interesting from time to time you see parents say that this one is just like me, this one is just like the mother, for whatever it is. Why is that? Because they notice that. Now, if you do that too much and too, you know, forcefully, then other children could be turned off to it. But nonetheless, the parent has to recognize where the child is and what the child is and guide that child appropriately. Here, Yaakov had very good intentions. You know, he saw Yosef as his natural heir, Yosef as the source of continuity, of security for the Beis Yaakov, the Beis Yisrael. So Yosef is the natural leader, notwithstanding that Reuven was the Bechor. And so he had to find a way to express it. It could be over time they would have been able to work it out on their own. Unfortunately, their time was very, very short. Look at number 7. Vayove Yosef is divasam ra'a el avihem. Yosef brought evil reports to his father about the brothers, meaning Yosef's flaw. Yosef was a great tzaddik, but he wasn't born Yosef a tzaddik. He became a tzaddik, unlike most gedolim today, or born tzaddikim, as you well know. Yosef brought evil reports to his father about his brothers, meaning when he perceived that his father designated him for leadership, then he assumed that meant as well that in their current circumstance, even Yaakov's lifetime, he should assume a lordly role over them. Big mistake. What did he say? Remer Rav Yehuda Rav Shimon. Remer said, he told his father, Chashudim heim bonecha al ever menachai, that your sons are to be suspected of eating limbs torn from a living animal, one of the Shemitz Bnei Noach. Reb Shimon Omer, Tolen Heinei Nehem B'Vnos Aretz. They're a little too promiscuous for their own good. their eyes are, they are gazing upon the girls of the land. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mizalzel b'vnei shashvachos v'korn lehen avadim. Rabbi Yehuda said, no, this, it wasn't the sin of violation of Mizbeni Noach, but rather they were haughty. They were haughty towards their brothers, their half-brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. What's the difference in the two? So the first two, of course, are crimes. One is cruelty. So cruelty, Eri Menachai, is banned. It's one of the Noahide laws. But it breeds a personality that can easily murder as well. Once you are prone to that type of violence, you know, ripping an animal apart, a live animal apart just to eat it, so you can do anything. And the other, of course, is akin to Gilai Royos, promiscuity. The B'nai Ashrachos is divisiveness, it's arrogance, it's haughtiness, that they see themselves as B'nai Leah. Remember, Leah had the most of the children, six. They are seven, really, counting Dina. They see themselves as the primary, they're the bulk of the Bnei Yaakov, so therefore they felt that they could be mezalzel, they could demean the other shvachos. Of course, that's very unhealthy for a nation, all right, to have one segment of the nation condescending to another segment of the nation. Sad to say every nation is like that, even ours, but it's not supposed to be like that. So the question here is, what exactly was the flaw? Was the flaw one of cruelty? You know, you could say Yosef meant well also, because if these midos took root in his brothers, the whole nation's in danger as well. If they're too cruel, if they're too lascivious, if they're too arrogant, you can't have a nation that's going to be at odds like that. But the Medrash goes on to say, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Simon Amar, Al Tfaseihon Laka, Yosef, in fact, they had all three. And Yosef, in fact, was punished because he had brought these tidings, these bad tidings, about all three to his father. The beautiful pasuk in Mishlei, Peles u'mozne mishpat l'Hashem, that Peles, scales and just balances, are really God's. God is the repository of midah k'neged midah, in the sense that everything is worked out. Every person gets his due. Every person gets his due. And even, the Farshim say, even Avdei Hashem are not treated equally by God. Okay? Two people can do the exact same mitzvah, and they won't be treated the same way by God. Why not? And by the way, that's a very interesting corollary to the previous notion of treating everyone the same. And why really doesn't happen like that? God doesn't treat everyone the same. I'll give you a simple reason. A person who does, two people do the exact same mitzvah, all right? But one comes from a poor background. One had a great, more obstacles to overcome. One does it with more enthusiasm. One has more difficulty in it. Each person is different. If each person is different, then even the response of Hashem is different. Who can weigh this? Only God. That's Peles u'mozne mishpat l'Hashem. These types of scales, these balances, these measurements can only be made by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Amar la Kadosh Baruch Hu. So God said, in effect, to Yosef, Ata marta chashudim banecha levi menachai. You said they're suspected of tearing a limb from a living animal. Chayecha by your life, afil b'shasa kalkolo, einam el shochatim v'ochlim. Even when they're going to sell you into slavery, they make sure. Remember they sat down to a meal after they sold Yosef. The Torah says, "Vayishchatu sirizim." They made sure to shecht that goat, and then eat it, and then bring the blood to the father. They dipped the ksonas apasim in it. They shechted it first, though. They didn't just tear a limb off. Atamardim izalzalim heim b'vnei ashrachos. You say that they are demeaning the children of the maidservants, call them slaves. L'eved nimka Yosef, you'll be a slave. Ata marta tolin enem b'vnos ha'aretz. You say they're promiscuous. They have very lascivious eyes. Chayecha sheni megar b'chas adov. I'm going to send a bear against you. Who's the bear? Potiphar's wife. That's correct. So in the end, everything has worked out. But you see, even from the very beginning here, each of the parties, with Yaakov, Yosef, his brothers, they all had different midos that had to be rectified in order to ensure that the family what remained whole. Yes.
What's the literal translation of Pelos?
Pelos is scale.
Oh, it is scale.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, next. Yosef then has his dreams. Not content to bring bad reports to his father, he starts sharing his dreams as well. Word to the wise, if you have a dream about someone else, make sure it's a positive dream before you tell them. Okay, so he dreamt first of the alumim, the sheaves, all right, and then of the luminaries. Vayomru lo echov, his brother said to him, Hamaloch timloch aleinu, are you going to rule over us? Note the double language, not Hamaloch aleinu, Hamaloch timloch. What's the double language? Reb Levi, Reb Simon, Charamar, Mibnei she'anu oso ba'ayin ra'o, lefichach mamid rishoyim. Because they answered him ba'ayin ra'o with a grudging eye, so therefore Yosef would be the ancestor of evil kings. Okay, who are we talking about? Yeravam ben Nevat, who was a descendant of Yosef, who split the Malchus Yisrael off from Malchus Yehuda. That's one shot. That's the double language. He's a king, but Ba'ayin Ra, we understand his kingship. Or Charamar Mifnesha Anu Oso Beloshen Kaful Lefichachu Mamim Melochem, because they answered him in a double language, Hamaloch Timloch. All right. So therefore, Yosef will have a lot of kings, not just Yeravam, but Yehu as well. What's the pshat? What's the double language? Repetition in Torah, as in life, always makes the statement more forceful, more emphatic. Okay. But what they saw means ba'ayin ra, they saw with a grudging eye that Yosef is so supercilious, so abrupt, so corrupt, that he thinks royalty inheres in him naturally, that there'll be a stumble in Yosef's legacy. In other words, Yosef might very well be a king. That, you shouldn't understand the measures that they predicted, you know, Yosef would have a Yeravam and Nevat in his future. But rather it means that if a person has a certain midah, if you just project that midah, it may have a natural conclusion that's positive, but it may also lead to his downfall. Okay? Let's say someone is very bright, so you could project how his intelligence will lead him to success. But a person can be so bright, right, too clever by half, that his wisdom leads to his downfall as well. That's what they saw in Yosef. That maybe Hamaloch, maybe he'll be a Melech, but Maloch Timloch, if he feels it so if he's overeager in his quest for royalty, then that type of arrogance will be part of that very concept, and that arrogance will eventuate in rulers who may not have the same wisdom as Yosef, and that's Yeravam and Nevat. Well, the downfall of every leader is arrogance. Hey, look at the White House, that's the exact same thing. When a person becomes so convinced of his superiority in every sphere that nothing can go wrong and everyone else is an idiot, that's when you know. Lifnei Shever Gaon, the Pasuk says. That's pride goes before the fall. It's a Pasuk in Mishlei. That's the first pshat, Ba'in Ra. The second pshat is because they use Lashon Kaful, the flaw is not in Yosef, but the flaw is in them. That was the first pshat, saw Hamaloch Timloch, as they were so anxious to expose Yosef's flaw. They said eventually it'll destroy him. Here, the flaw really is not in Yosef, but in them. They couldn't tolerate it, even if it was true. That's why they repeated it. Hamaloch Timloch Aleinu, can't be. So they were paid back double. What was the double? Yosef ruled not only over them, but of a Mitzrayim also, and that they couldn't handle. All right, that's why. That's the background to the entire story. They went to Mitzrayim looking for Yosef. The Chazal said they went to the Shukshal Zonos. They went to the brothels to try to find him, because that's where they were. That's what they thought he would wind up. In their wildest dreams, they never thought that he'd be in the palace and a ruler. They had a completely opposite view, opposite perception of what Yosef really was. That's why they couldn't even see, you know, V'heim lo hikiru. How's that possible? Oh, you stare at someone long enough to recognize your brother, right? Oh, he went from 17 to 39, he changes beard, yes, no. How is it possible they wouldn't identify something about him, even after all the clues that they had? Because in a million years, they never thought he would be there. That's here, hamaloch timloch aleinu. It so galled them that this whippersnapper would think he's royal malchus. Yeah, he did rule double. They bowed down to him, as well as all of Egypt as well. Okay, nine. Simple point worthy to make. Shouldn't think too harshly about the Achim, the Shiftei Kah. Vayirachov ki oso havi mikol achov, vayisnu oso. The brother saw the father loved him, they hated him. Okay? Omer avava brazeira mitoch genusen shol shvatim ato yodah shivchon. From the this rebuke of the shvatim, you see their praise as well. Because the Novi says about Avshalom, Avshalom's sister Tamar was raped by Amnon, their half-brother. V'odiber Avshalom im Amnon l'meirav atov. Avshalom never let on that he hated Amnon, he just killed him. But he spoke to him nicely. He never let on anything, that anything was wrong till he killed him. Debelibe Brahma, whatever was in his heart, he concealed everything. He hid his hatred of Amnon, Bilibo, in his heart. Brahma, however, Acha here, v'lo yachlu dabra l'shalom. They could not speak peaceably to Yosef. Diva libhon bifumhom. What was in their heart was in their hearts, was in their mouths as well. Meaning the Shvatim were not hypocrites. They did not hate, they did not hide their contempt for Yosef. They spoke about it. They did not bear a grudge. That's an important thing in this, in many contexts, but certainly in our social world. The worst thing is to bear a grudge against someone. That's the law in the Torah. Lo sisna sechicha bilvavecha. You cannot hate your brother in your heart, because then it just festers and it gets worse and it becomes magnified over time. The best thing is to talk about it. If you talk about it, sometimes there's no full resolution immediately, but over time it's much more likely that a resolution will take place. Here, they did not hide anything. They did not hide their distaste for Yosef at all. They told him. They told him, and they told him again and again. And this way they all had it out. They all knew where each other stood. Finally, just briefly, number 10. So he tells the second dream. After the first, his father is angry at him. Then Vayikanu v'achav, his brothers were jealous. V'aviv shamars hadavar, his father filed this away, but literally filed it away. Amar v'levi natal kulmus v'chasa beza yom eza shah eza makom. Yaakov Avinu took his quill and he wrote down exactly when Yosef had his dream, what day, what time, where it took place, all the details, all right? So Yaakov, according to this, wrote it for posterity. He realized it was not just a dream now, but it was a nevuah of some unknown future. But he filed it away. Even more, Chiya Rabba said, the Ruach HaKodesh said to him, record these things. That according to Rabbi, Yaakov was upset. Part of him was upset that his family was at war with each other, but nonetheless a different part of him, the part animated by the Ruach HaKodesh, knew something was happening that was beyond the ordinary. And finally, Rabbi Levi said in the name of Chamar Chanina, Kach avino Yaakov Savar, v'ra dvar mimash mishin uvon, Amar, im nizbakra pinkaso mayachal nilasos. Yaakov Avinu, according to this last pshat, Yaakov Avinu experienced this in real time. He knew something was different, but when the tsaris came, Yosef was gone, Yehuda was gone, Yaakov would consult this pinkas, he would take out this pinkas and examine it, and he would grieve over it, and he would worry, maybe sin, my sins, caused Yosef to disappear. Maybe something Yosef did caused him to disappear, but ma yochal ani lasos, what can I do? He accepted the gzeir of Hashem. All these thoughts and all these emotions that Yaakov had were all swirling about in Yaakov. What a difficult, painful time for Yaakov. After the height of Ayeshev Yaakov, within weeks, if not months, he's in a situation of the loss of a child and his family torn asunder. All, of course, away to make his family whole, to move the will of the Hashgacha forward, so the nation of Israel should wind up in Mitzrayim, and there become the Am Hashem, receive the Torah, and return to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, I thank you all very much. Tonight, by the way, part 15, great decisions, the 6-day war. Everyone's invited.